Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Bear Tooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint, and we've got Evelyn Pyburn on the line with the Big Sky Business Journal. Evelyn, thanks for calling in.
Well, good morning.
Yeah, give us what's going on with the business world these days.
Well, I always try to have something positive to say, and there's really a lot of positive stuff to say about Montana. The governor put out a release that makes clear that Montana is only one of two states in the nation where wage growth has outpaced inflation since 2020. And the report talks about how well Montana economy is doing, and it is doing very well. And for years and years, I recall how in the realm of almost every economic indicator, Montana was always near the bottom compared to what was happening in other states. And while there have been many significant changes that have contributed to this improvement, such as reducing or eliminating the business equipment taxes on the means of production, I have to say that one of the biggest things is communications technology that allows Montana to join the mainstream of the business world. We are talking about a change that has been in effect and ongoing for the last 30 or 40 years. Prior to that, Montana was always in the backwaters of whatever was going on in the country. It was expensive and time-consuming to come to Montana, and the height of communication was the old-fashioned telephone. Data was exchanged no faster than that. We relied on mail. Getting materials and equipment took weeks by truck. And if anything was produced in the state, getting it delivered to customers in the outside world was expensive and time-consuming. Air travel was always expensive and very time-consuming. So we were simply out of the mainstream. And all of that has changed so dramatically now that no one even thinks about it twice.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is really amazing. And I think, like you mentioned at the beginning, there's a whole bunch of factors here, including, you know, I'm assuming, you know, all the people that want to move here, the fact that probably we're not as impacted in terms of the immigration that we've had over the last, you know, actually 3.5 years, just over 10 million new immigrants just in the last 3.5 years in the United States. There's a big Wall Street Journal article that reported on this recently, and most of them are low-skilled, uneducated, and Spanish-speaking, and they're the ones that are taking up all of the, basically, almost all of the labor jobs, and that, in turn, is kind of holding down wages in a lot of different areas. Maybe that's another reason we're not seeing that as bad here, but also, I think we've got some problems with housing costs and the ability of businesses to find employees going forward. I'm going to get Evelyn's take on that. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back with Evelyn Pyburn and the Big Sky Business Journal. David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Congress is staring at a deadline this month to prevent a government shutdown. A stopgap bill of some kind will be needed to keep the lights on. The deadline is September 30th, but there are several factors which could complicate those efforts. There's a debate over how long to run a short-term extension. There's bipartisan backing behind a continuing resolution, or CR, that would keep the government funded at current levels beyond the November elections, when either side could gain significant leverage in funding talks depending on the outcome. But some Republicans in the House and Senate are bullish on former President Trump's chances of reclaiming the Oval Office. They're pressing for a stopgap bill that would kick the next funding deadline into 2025. Proponents of the idea argue the bill could help prevent Congress from being jammed with an end-of-the-year funding package combining all 12 government funding bills for the next fiscal year, while potentially giving Mr. Trump more input on the legislation if he wins the White House this fall. Democrats have pushed back strongly against the idea, as have some Republicans, especially those tasked with crafting the annual spending legislation. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Steve the Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We've got Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal on the line. Evelyn, I was just talking there before the break, kind of my reaction to the news you shared about Montana economic news out recently showing our wage growth outstripping inflation. Kind of surprising to see Montana economic news, you know, doing so well and certainly doing above the... Just because for decades, for as long as I've ever been alive, Montana's always been sort of dead last on all economic news. And you're kind of pointing towards, I think, the increase in high-speed internet access here and some of those other things. And my comment was kind of, I wonder how much more do we have to grow in terms of business growth, wage growth, economic growth in the state when you can't really develop any land? We've got all this land that's owned by the government. All the private land is being used for something. Very, very difficult to get any kind of new housing built. In what you're seeing and all the data you're seeing, do you see a good economic future, business future, or do you see the housing costs and the basically just the cost of living? I mean, people just can't afford to live here, and it's like, yeah, that's great if we've got businesses are doing well, but if nobody can afford to live here, nobody can afford a house. That to me seems kind of one of the big economic headwinds we're facing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that for the most part, that whole issue rests in our hands. It's a Montana state issue. And I have attended a lot of different meetings where the issue of housing is primary and people start talking about, and it doesn't seem to matter who they are, whether they're a politician or an expert analysis or whatever, the answer is always regulations. We have far, far too many regulations. I've read things where it says, and this is an old number, but it was like $40,000 in the cost of a new home has nothing to do but complying with regulations. And while I know the governor has talked about having this special committee to figure out how to have more housing and reduce regulations, I don't see it. The conversation really focused on where those regulations are coming from, and they're in our own local building department. You know, you go talk to a builder, and they can start lamenting immediately how many problems they face whenever they go down to get a building permit or to get plans approved and stuff. And these, as far as I've been able to understand, most of these regulations are handed down from the top down. In our local planning department and whoever else makes these decisions, they just accept them and incorporate them, even though a lot of them are nonsensical, you know, like they're devised for heavy rainfall areas, and the local contractors have to put in drainage systems that you would put in Louisiana, maybe. And all these add costs unnecessarily. And then, you know, they had this revision of our codes in Billings not that long ago. And all the builders were saying that, you know, well, they tried to give input and they were pretty much shunned and pushed aside.
Yep.
As the regulators did what they darn well wanted to do. And I think that, I mean, the fact that most of the builders, they want to build outside city limits and not inside city limits, so they don't have to deal with the regulators. So,
it's the same with property taxes too. And I've been to some of the local city meetings involving some of these building code issues that are driving up costs, where the contractors are going to the city and saying, hey, these building codes, they are adopted at a state level for for the state. And the, but in terms of changing them, the cities do have the ability to change them, and then the cities are the ones that enforce them, of course. So it really is up to these cities, and they simply don't care. When the contractors say, hey, and I think your 40,000 number, if I recall correctly from some of the recent numbers I've heard from places like the HBA, which do a lot of good work in this area, it's, I think it's like 80,000 or even more now, that's of a cost to build a new home within the city of Billings. It's all just licensing and local ordinances and regulations that, like you said, a lot of these things don't make sense. They don't even apply here. And you tell the city, and then they just kind of say, yeah, we don't care, get lost. And then, of course, when it comes to property taxes, I personally have gone to the city administrator and the city mayor and asked them, hey, what are you guys doing to try to trim the city budget? Why are you guys, is there anything you guys are doing to try to trim the city budget, to try to cut property taxes on residential real estate here in the city of Billings so people can afford to live here? And the response I got back was, oh, well, this is all the Republicans' fault in the legislature. It's the Republicans' governor and blah, 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 blah. And we can only raise our spending at the city level for 6% a year. So we're requesting a full 6% a year in increased funding. So I think you're right when you say a lot of this is in our control. That's the good news, right? Is we can change this stuff.
Right. I think we have a governor who's pretty inclined to do this, but I think he needs to see a lot of push from the bottom up, because this is going to be, every city has to deal with this individually, because they each have their own planning department and their own bureaucratic network that you really have to challenge and unravel, and I don't think that's an easy thing to do.
Evelyn, can you stick with us for one more segment? I got some of these other stories in the hot seat I wanted to ask you about, or do you have to run?
No, I'm here.
All right, we'll have one more segment here with Evelyn Pyburn in the Big Sky Business Journal. We got the Big Sky Business Journal hot sheet here with a couple of interesting Montana-specific economic stories. We'll get to those right after this. This is David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
Democracy 24.
The Trump fans take a devoted an entire day on the campaign trail to attacking VP Harris's foreign policies and touting their own. One emerging feature of the new Trump doctrine, no more fighting foreign wars.
Everybody said, oh, he's going to start wars with his attitude. No, my attitude kept us out of wars. I stop wars with phone calls.
My entire adult life has been shaped by presidents who threw Americans into unwise wars and then failed to win them. And if we're being honest, it wasn't just Democrats. It was sometimes Republicans, too.
The signature Trump issues from his first term remain in place, forcing Europeans to pay NATO dues, competing with China on the global market, and ironclad support for Israel. Amid new reports, Harris plans to re-enter the Iran nuclear deal if elected. Her campaign says, quote, while the preferred path is through diplomacy, re-entering that deal is not our focus. In Washington, Dillon and Turner, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks ag. With Lane Nordland.
U.S. beef exports continued building momentum in July. USDA data shows the July beef exports totaled over 110,000 metric tons, up 7% from a year ago, and the second largest of the year. Export value rose 12% to $910 million, also the second highest this year. July growth was fueled by higher demand in Japan, Taiwan, Mexico, and the Middle East, and other parts of Asia. From January through July, value increased 6% from last year, despite a 2% drop in volume.
Are you concerned about the impact government policies could have on your cattle business? One way to make your voice heard in Washington is by joining NCBA. When you join, you'll be part of the nation's oldest and largest national cattle industry organization that has a professional team working in Washington, D.C. on issues that matter to cattle-producing families nationwide. Don't stay on the sidelines. Make your voice heard by joining NCBA today at the website ncba.org.
Pork exports during the month of July were well above year-ago levels, led by a record-value shipment to Mexico. Pork exports reached over 24,000 metric tons during the month, 10% higher than last year. Export values rose 13% to just over $710 million, fueled by a record $244 million market in Mexico. I'm Lee Northland.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We're talking to Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal. Evelyn, I think folks are going to be really interested to hear about your story. Montana lacks stickiness simply because it relates to all of these newcomers that have come here. Can you tell folks a little bit about that one? Evelyn, sorry. Amateur hour here in the studio. I forgot to bring you on. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay, well, as you were saying earlier, Montana has been a popular destination for people moving from other states over the past several years. But it turns out that not all of them stay. They don't stick, according to the movebuddha.com. Montana is the second least stickiness in the nation in 2024. The only other state which was more prone to losing their residents to out-migration was Alaska. In fact, the Mountain West is home to 7 of the 10 least sticky states. But just because a state is low in stickiness doesn't mean they cease attracting additional newcomers. Montana, in addition to most of the other low stickiness states, continues to gain new residents. Montana has the highest in-to-out move ratio in the country since 2020, averaging 2.37 new residents from beyond the state lines for every Montanan who leaves. So, Montana, while we have a lot of people coming into the state, we have even more who are leaving the state. And one of the reasons, or primary reason, is the cost of living and real estate prices, just like you were referring to. And their study revealed that the overall economic growth of the state or employment was not a primary consideration. It was primarily that of the cost of living and not being able to afford a place to live.
So I was originally kind of thinking that this story was more about the out-of-staters that come to Montana, and then they move here, they intend to live here, and then they end up leaving for some reason or another. I was going to chalk it up to them finally experiencing a Montana winter, but this kind of sounds like this more might be native Montanans leaving the state at the same time as these out-of-staters are coming in. That would be terrible news, and I think you are seeing that, because most native Montanans simply can't afford the cost of living here. And so is it really the case that basically all of us native Montanans are just being replaced by people from other states, that apparently you can sell a house in California and you'll have plenty of money to buy a house here in Montana? You sell, a house in Montana, you can't afford to buy another one here.
And I think it's a combination of both. I don't think they have the means to separate in the data who is who, but kind of just from hearing people comment and stuff, I think that there are a lot of people who, if you're living around Bozeman and had a job there and you can't afford to live there, you're going to have to look for someplace else to get a job and live. Hopefully, maybe they'll find someplace else in the state, but I'm sure many of them move someplace else, another state. But I have heard of incidents, and I think it's probably not uncommon that people come here and they go, I heard one guy go, I'm never spending another winter in Montana.
Right. And then when half of our summer is filled with smoky skies because the Democrats can't manage a forest, it's like, wow. So you get May and June are kind of your nice months, and the other 10 months aren't as great.
So I think it's both. And I don't know if in the long term that's good or bad.
Well, I was in Bozeman. I was in Bozeman recently, staying at a hotel, and I asked the front desk lady, just, you know, hey, who are, you know, where are you from, and stuff like that, just making small talk, and she said, hey, yeah, I'm from here, and I live with my parents. That's the only way, you know, that's the only way somebody that's working the front desk at a hotel, or, you know, working some of these entry level jobs. The only way you're going to be able to do that in Bozeman is if you live with your folks.
Yeah, or something like that. You know, maybe some of them, if they own their own home, they can sell it and, you know, make enough ahead of the game to go someplace else and buy a home for less. But, I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, some town that doesn't have quite the high housing prices. But I hear people saying frequently that they have relatives or friends who live in Bozeman, and they're waiting for, you know, like their kids to get out of school or some specific thing.
Hey, Evelyn, we're at the 7:30 news break. Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal. Evelyn, we got a couple more minutes here, and then I'll let you go. I know that there's a couple more stories that you've got in the hot sheet here this morning, but anything else you wanted to talk about here for the last couple minutes?
Well, no, other than, you know, the stickiness of Montana and its lack of stickiness. Yeah, I think that Montanans in some cities are being forced to find alternatives, and I don't know how they're going to solve that problem, because someplace like Bozeman and Big Sky, they need those people desperately to be workers, you know, to provide all the services and stuff that people come here to get, and yet they can't find a way of living. So. It's a big dilemma for some communities.
I mean, one answer would be to build more houses. That would be one way to solve the issue.
Right, but at the cost, you know, you can't be, you know, a waitress and afford a new house usually.
Well, so. I know I was talking earlier this week about there's a new study. Or a new report out of one of these interim legislative committees about how we need more prison beds, but it's over $216,000 per bed to build a new prison, which I was just blown away at that number. I mean, these costs have just gotten so out of control for any. I mean, if it's over $216,000 per prison bed, what for a couple of concrete walls and a concrete bench and a toilet and this, I mean. Yeah, and you're talking about building a new house. These costs are just out of control.
Yep, they are. And I think it all comes back around. We have to build houses that are affordable, and the easiest way to do that is to eliminate costs in building them that isn't necessary. And
yeah, which would be nice if our liberal city council would do that. It'd be great.
Right, and I would like to hear them talk about that. I've never really heard anybody address that. When it's brought up, they quickly jump over it, you know. They make it a political issue when it's really not a political issue. It's a difficult issue, but I think that, you know, trying to make it a political issue means it's never going to get solved.
No, I mean, these issues are brought up to the city building officials, and you say, hey, this particular building code, it doesn't make sense here. It doesn't make sense to do it in Montana. This is illogical. It's not worth it. And the response is, well, that's what the code is, and we adopted the code in full. Sorry.
Right, and it's almost like a religion. There's no common sense, you know. It's
just pure adherence to the code. They don't care. They don't think about it logically. It's just whatever the code says, we're going to force you to do it. And you tell people, well, that's going to mean that the people of Billings can't afford a house. We don't care. That's the code.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
There has been an explosion of media coverage of Donald Trump. Judge Juan Merchan, who Trump believes hates him, postponed the sentencing in the New York hush money case until after the election. Now, that seems like the right call, because how do you sentence him to jail or even probation in the final weeks of a presidential campaign? Former president was in court appealing the gargantuan verdict for E. Jean Carroll, spoke for 49 minutes after that, said he'd never met her, all the things he said before. Israel would no longer exist if Kamala Harris is elected president. That seems like a gross exaggeration, considering that she's been pro-Israel and is married to a Jewish man. And Dick Cheney saying he will vote for Kamala Harris because he considers Trump to be dangerous. Trump called him an irrelevant rhino, Republicans in name only. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
Hey, Sean.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble, Noble with a K. I'm an attorney here in Billings. You can find me online at LectureFan, LCTRFAN. If you can't get enough of my content here, you can get more there. Open phones for the rest of the show. Nothing else on the schedule, folks, for the next, what is it, 2.5 hours left? Two hours and 20 minutes of nothing but your phone calls, 406-29, and my monologues, if none of you call in, 406-294-0970, 294-0970. Would love to hear what you guys are thinking about this morning. What's on your mind? What's important to you, especially after a weekend like we just had? I wanted to get to a couple more stories out of the Big Sky Business Journal hot sheet. I was going to talk to Evelyn Pyburn about these, but we ran out of time, so I was going to just do them myself. She's got a story in here. By the way, if you guys aren't signed up for the Big Sky Business Journal hot sheet, check it out. Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced that more than 1 million ineligible voters have been removed from the voter rolls in the past 3 years, including 6,500 non-citizens and 457,000 people who were dead. Of the 65 non-citizens, 2,000 have a voter history, according to the Epoch Times. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin also removed 6,303 non-citizens from voter rolls. Alabama removed over 3,000 non-citizens from the voter rolls. You might wonder how this happens, folks, and it's pretty darn easy when you've got the federal government giving out Social Security numbers to non-citizens, and you've got states giving out driver's licenses to non-citizens, and you've got a federal law that says anybody that gets a driver's license can get registered to vote. Pretty easy to see how that can happen, but good on these states for going through their voter rolls and making sure they're accurate. EVs are pushing up all prices. About the Biden-Harris administration mandate for shifting to EVs, Montana economist Robert Bryce via Substack has reported that EPA quotas have resulted in higher prices for gas-powered cars too. This is just like health insurance. Okay, Medicare and Medicaid drive up the cost of our private health insurance. By the way, big story here coming up in Montana is going to be Medicaid expansion again. There's some stories in the Montana press this weekend about some panels that were had of discussions about the upcoming 2025 Montana legislative session and how there's going to be some pretty intense debates on some pretty critical issues, including some issues that are going to require some funding and spending by the state, as well as this issue of Medicaid expansion. Of course, you know, Medicaid is a Democrat program put in place by Democrat President Lyndon B. Johnson in the Great Society program that resulted in bankrupting and sending our country into insolvency, resulted in lower quality health care, resulted in skyrocketing costs of health care, resulted in overregulation and so much red tape on our health care providers that they had to spend the money to comply with all these regulations, which then get passed on to us. Never mind the fact that this is health care for people that are low income and are not working, which is okay. You want to have the state pay for that? That's fine. That's great. But it's really not the best-run program, and you see a lot of sort of unfair things happening with it and a lot of abuse of the system and everything like that. And so my question is why would the state of Montana, Republican state, Republican legislature, Republican governor, why would we expand a Democrat program that's destroying our health care, destroying our health insurance, and is destroying the federal budget and is destroying the state budget and is subject to abuse? Maybe we could have a little bit of a better way to provide health care for low-income people in Montana other than Medicaid. That would be my solution. But here's what Robert Bryce, Montana economist via Substack, has reported. Ford lost over $65,000 for every EV it sold in the first quarter. Let me repeat that. This is insane. Ford lost over $65,000 for every EV it sold. In 2023, Ford lost more money on EVs than it made in net profit. In addition, there's evidence that the market for EVs is small. Yeah, it's tiny. It's like 5% of the market or something like that. EVs have long been a niche market. That niche market is primarily defined by class and ideology. In other words, rich Democrats. And so you folks out there, you workers of Montana, you are paying for rich Democrats to get EVs. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that wonderful, folks? When you go to the grocery store, when you go to the grocery store to buy just like two or three items and it's $100, or you go to the grocery store for a week's worth of food for your family and it's $400, well, just know that you're paying all that higher prices and you're paying all those higher costs so that rich Democrats can get EVs. Isn't that wonderful? And then when you pay all those federal taxes that you're paying, just remember, folks, you're paying all those federal taxes so that rich Democrats can get EVs. Isn't that a wonderful thing? According to the University of California, about half of all EVs went to the 10% most Democrat counties, and a third went to the top 5% most Democrat counties. They fell 24%. Okay, Mercedes reported an 8% drop in EV sales. Ford had to halt EV investments. So the EV industry is collapsing because guess what? Guess what, folks? There's only so many rich Democrats out there. All the rich Democrats already got their EVs. So there's no more buyers of EVs because there's no more rich Democrats. All the rich Democrats already got their EVs. And by the way, folks, you paid for them. Isn't that wonderful that you've now paid for or subsidized all of the EVs that all the rich Democrats in the U.S. could want? And now all the rich Democrats are they've already got their EVs. So now the EV sales are crumbling because nobody wants them except for rich Democrats. Oh, Debbie sent in a message over the weekend about Chip Roy, Representative Chip Roy, a new report on the devastation of the border crisis under the Biden-Harris admin in a new report. And by the way, folks, Kamala Harris has finally put out a quote-unquote policy section on her website where she calls for amnesty for illegal aliens, which means giving American citizenship to 50 million illegals in our country. That's the Kamala Harris policy. And she's had that policy for a long time. And that's Chuck Schumer's policy. And that's John Tester's policy. The Democrats have wanted to give American citizenship to the illegal aliens in this country for a long time. That's why they've got the borders wide open. That's why they're quote-unquote paroling into our country anybody that shows up at the southern border. Anybody that shows up gets quote-unquote paroled into the United States. That's what they call that's what they call releasing them. And this is not just like, oh, we catch you at the southern border and release you back onto the southern side of the border. No, folks. We catch them at the southern border, and then we release them into the interior of the United States. We give them phones and food and housing and give them transportation to wherever they want to go in the United States. And the reason they're doing that is because their end game is to give those people full-blown American citizenship, which comes with it, of course, the right to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and lots of other things too. And so that's why it's so, like, ridiculous to hear these Democrats talk about, oh, we're going to save entitlements. You're going to destroy entitlements. Adding 50 million illegal aliens to our entitlement rolls when the vast, vast majority of them are Spanish-speaking, uneducated, and unskilled, that's from the Wall Street Journal just this last week, folks. There's a big Wall Street Journal report about how just in the last 3.5 years, just in the last 3 years under Biden-Harris Tester, over 10 million people have come into this country illegally. The vast, vast majority speak Spanish. They don't have any skills, and they don't have any education. That's 10 million just in 3.5 years. I've heard 30 million was the estimate before that. So that puts it at 40 million. And then let's just throw on another 10 million just because of all the undercounting that we know happens with these numbers. So you're looking at 50 million. Remember, folks, we only have about 350 million people in the country as a whole. So, yeah, let's go from... Let's take programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security that are already going bankrupt, that are already headed towards insolvency, and then let's add 50 million people to them who don't have any skills and don't have any education, and let's just see how the entitlement programs work. Let's see how the federal budget's going to work after we add 50 million people to the rolls.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Fox News commentary.
A U.S. Navy warship commander was relieved of his duties after a viral image showed him using a rifle with a scope mounted backward. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
It's time to take the quiz. 5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
History, pop culture, science, sports, civics. How much do you know? Let's find out.
Who was the first person to walk on the moon?
Jackson or something?
Neil Armstrong.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz right now at thequiz.fox.
Commander Cameron Yeast, a U.S. Navy warship commander, has been relieved of his duties after a photo of him firing a rifle with a scope mounted backward went viral. Even worse, the image was posted on the Navy's Instagram account. Did no one notice this? In a statement, the U.S. Navy said Commander Yeast was let go due to a loss of confidence in his ability to command the guided missile destroyer. Yeah, you think? What the heck is going on with the U.S. military? You know, by and large, our U.S. warriors are skilled, elite, and knowledgeable, but dang, this is a rough one. The world is staring down the barrel of another world war, and it's not comforting to see a high-ranking military leader use his equipment improperly. Now is certainly not the time. Perhaps the U.S. military should focus less on DEI initiatives and woke training and more on the logistics of, I don't know, war fighting? I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless at Outkick.com
and his travel agency.com.
All right, summer's over. Kids are back in school. Time to get to work, especially here in 2024. Man, it's crazy. Just a few short weeks left until Election Day. You're going to want to sound off on the big news of the day. You're going to want to tell folks all across Montana what's on your mind. Sometimes it's not always the big news of the day. Sometimes it's just the fun stuff, too. Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard all across Montana. RBAMontana.com.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Open phones on the Montana Talks, 406-294-0970. We got Scott in Bozeman on the line. Scott, thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Good morning, David. There's a conversation I have with friends, coworkers, et cetera, and it drives me nuts how often I have it or often I hear this. I'd like to vote for a Republican or Donald Trump, but I just can't stand the man. And that drives me crazy. If you can't look past that, then realize that we need somebody that's effective, that you're never going to meet them personally, and you don't need to like them, you need them to be effective, then I don't know what to tell you, right? I mean, if you're looking for morality in a world leader, I'm not saying we shouldn't look for it, but if you're waiting for that, well, you're never going to vote for anyone. If you think the opposition are just and right and moral, then you're deceiving yourself. I mean, we can go back to look at the old late French president François Mitterrand. You know, when he passed away in his funeral, his wife and his mistress were in the front row. Right? I mean, these are not people that are necessarily quality people. We need them to be effective.
No, you're right. And that's literally the only reason I've heard from anybody about why they won't vote for Donald Trump, because when it comes to his policy and when it comes to the job he actually did as president, there are no reasons to not vote for him. And so it's I don't know if it's Trump derangement syndrome or if it's just low information voters or what. What do you think is causing people to actually literally vote against the best interests of our country simply because they don't like somebody's personality?
It is TDS, David. I believe it is. And, you know, these are the same people that... Sorry, there's kids going to school next to me. You know, these are the same people that never had a problem with him on The Apprentice or when he was hobnobbing around Manhattan with the socialites and the Museum of Modern Art and Hollywood. They had no problems with him until the media got a hold of him, which is what they do to people. Again, I'm not saying he's a necessarily perfectly upright
human. Of course not. No, and none of us do. None of us say
correct
that Donald Trump is perfect.
Right. Right. We need to look past that. You know, he was effective. And he even said, I think, was it last week or something with Hannity? I think it was last week. He said, you know, I get some of you don't like me. You don't need to like me, but you need me. Right?
I mean, he
actually said that. It's kind of, you know, you need me on that wall. You want me on that wall. Right?
Right. And apparently the house cats and the house pets and the geese in Ohio also need Donald Trump because apparently the Biden-Harris tester migrants are literally eating people's cats. There was a Charlie Kirk actually posted this story about this. I was shocked to see the actual story. But listen to this, folks. This is something that Charlie Kirk had posted. Okay, this is a Springfield, Ohio post. Warning to all about our beloved pets and those around us. My neighbor informed me that her daughter's friend had lost her cat. She checked pages, kennels, asked around, etc. One day, she came home from work. As soon as she stepped out of her car, looked towards the neighbor's house where the Haitian migrants live, and saw her cat hanging from a branch like you'd do a deer for butchering. And they were carving it up to eat. I've been told they're doing this to dogs. They've been doing it at Snyder Park with the ducks and the geese, as I was told that last bit by rangers and police. Please keep a close eye on these animals. And then, of course, you've got pictures that are going around on social media of this type of thing happening as well. So not only do we need Trump, but the house cats and the geese in Springfield, Ohio need Trump. Dave in Butte says, but flat top is saving Social Security and Medicare. He's going to end it, dripping with sarcasm. Yeah, we're just talking about how you really want to destroy Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, add 50 million illiterate, unskilled workers to it. Hey, Gary in Billings, we ran out of time. Gary, hang with us. You'll be first up right after this.